Thank you so much.
Okay, let's see. Are we on? Can you hear me?
Yes, you can hear me. Okay.
Hi, everybody. I'm Liz, and I'm still an alcoholic.
Hi, Liz.
Hi, Roger.
Hi, I'm Roger, and I'm still an alcoholic.
Hi, Roger.
And I just spent a few minutes outside reestablishing a contact with my God, which allowed me to be totally centered for just a few minutes, which is really what this program is all about. Now we've got to this point, what do we do? We've established we're alcoholic. We've established there's nothing we can do on our own. We've established that there's possibility of a God in our lives, that if we're willing to understand or try to understand, he might be able to do something about it and help us. Then we had to do the work. We had to do an inventory. We had to sit down and talk to somebody else. And, you know, we're halfway through this program and we're exhausted. Look at all the stuff that we've done. Look at what we've been asked to do. And, you know, now what do we do?
And I just love this one. This one thing that I noticed is that we've done one, you know, doctor's opinion, step one, step two, step three, step four. And then we're into chapter six, and it's called Into Action. And that's step five. Are you kidding? What was all of that if it wasn't Into Action?
And as alcoholics, we want to know what we're going to get out of this. You know, there's no point in doing all of this unless we're actually going to get something from it. What have we got above? What have we got for ourselves at the point we've come to step six and seven? Hopefully, we've got some relief. Hopefully, we've got an established contact with the God of our understanding. And now what do we have? What do we have left to do? What is in it for us? And as Heidi said, at the end of step five, this is what we can do. We can look the world in the eye. We can be alone at perfect peace and ease. Does any of these sound familiar when we were drinking? When I was drinking, I never looked anybody in the eye. In fact, I was married for 15 years. I was drinking at the time. My wife sat down on the couch beside me, turned to me, faced me, covered her eyes, and said, "What color are my eyes?" And I said, "Brown," because she had brown hair. She had hazel-colored eyes. You know, I never looked anybody in the eye because I didn't. If I looked at you, then you were looking at me, and God, I didn't want you to see what I was because I was scared of that. I didn't like to be alone. I definitely didn't like to be alone. That's why I, you know, married several people in my lifetime. If I was alone, then I had to be with me, and, you know, we don't want to know that. Our fears fell from us. My whole life was lived with fear. Not the fear. I mean, I have other fears. I'm scared of heights. You know, I cannot sit in the nosebleed seats at Yankee Stadium. So in order for me to go to a baseball game, I have to have a job and earn really good money. I'm fearful of what you are going to think about me more than anything else. I'm fearful that I'm not going to get what I want. Or if I have it, somebody's going to take it away from me. And as I said, the most important fear is that you're going to find out about me. I'm 14 years sober. I just started a new job this past Monday. 3 days after I started my new job, which is in sales, I've been going around with my boss looking at exactly what he does so that I have a perfect understanding of what I'm going to be able to sell to you and you and my next, you know, my next prospective client. I'm working from home. I'm sitting at home. I'm making up a list of people that I know that I feel might be interested in the product that I'm about to sell them and start writing this list and decide who I'm going to call. The phone rings. My boss calls me. He's been my boss for 3 days. I've known him for 30 years, by the way. He's my boss for 3 days now. And he says, I'd like to have a meeting with you tomorrow morning. The first thought that ran through my mind was, oh, my God, I'm not doing enough. He's found out that I can never do this. I'm going to get fired before I even receive a paycheck. Why on earth was I stupid enough to quit my other job and start deciding to do this? You know, that's what goes on inside my head. And, you know, I don't like to admit it, but I've learned that admitting it, especially in a room of Alcoholics Anonymous, where other people understand what I'm saying and can, you know, go, okay, yeah, I think like that sometimes. No, I think like that all the time. But that's so much relief because that helps alleviate the fear.
That also sounds to me of bondage of self. Like we all just, a bunch of us went outside and did that third step prayer. And what we're asking in the third step is to be relieved of that bondage of self. Now, I don't know about you, but that bondage can return over and over without a thought or a care or a worry. Like, I am, you know, prey to bondage of self. That's bondage. And what we're given with these tools is freedom from that bondage, not just relief, like was just mentioned, but actual real life freedom. And then I lose it, and then I can take that third step all over again, and I have tools that I can use to be relieved from that bondage.
And we begin to feel the nearness of our Creator. Standing out in that back garden with 15, 20 people holding hands, reciting, not reciting, saying the third step prayer, meaning the words that I said, even though I don't remember them all the time, was allowed me to be closer to my God. What an amazing experience. What an amazing thing we have available to us.
Okay, so we had a great talk just now, thank you, about 3, 4, and 5. And now we have very specific directions on what to do to step 6. And, you know, I know from my personal experience and experience of sponsoring other women is that after the fifth step, you know, we will feel this instant, you know, some of us will feel this instant, like, freedom and this like, great light with this weight has been lifted from us. And, you know, it doesn't take very long for the whole world to feel like it's crumbling up on you again. And, like, suddenly, like, we turn and scared we're going to be the hole in the donut, or we're going to lose all this serenity. And, like, oh, my God, who am I become? What did I just do? This person knows all of my thoughts, da-da-da-da-da-da-da. And I find that actually returns also when I'm doing my 9-step amends. I'll be doing amends and feeling such great freedom. And then the world's coming up against me. Oh, my God, my character defects are up, up, up. And I'm, you know, and I get to do steps 6 and 7 over and over again. But the book is a very specific, you know, not much information on 6 and 7. So I brought my 12 and 12 to do a little reading out of that. But it gives us very specific directions. After we do our fifth step with our sponsor, we, you know, if you look on page 75, we return home, or we find a place where we can be quiet for an hour. We carefully review that. And for, you know, I have to remind my sponsees, that means, you know, it doesn't go to a movie. Don't call your girlfriends. No text messages. No checking emails. Quiet for an hour. And for some of us, that's like torture, especially in New York City. And carefully review what we have just done. So you have an hour to think about what you've just done and to review it, go over it. And after that hour, we thank God from the bottom of our hearts that we know him better. And hopefully after this point, you do know your higher power at least a little better. And no one's saying at this point you should have an 11-step conception and feel all spiritually like sound and like levitating. But you just know your higher power just a little bit better because you've taken these actions which are seemingly impossible, like share disclosing my resentments, fears, and sex harms to essentially a stranger. Like, that takes some serious courage. You know, that's what the Serenity Prayer asks us to have, is courage. And then we take the book down from the shelf. We turn to the page that contains the 12 steps, which is page 59. And we carefully review the first 5 proposals, asking if we omitted anything. So let's do that. So let's go to page 59. And it says here, so here are the first 5 proposals. Number 1, we admitted we were powerless over alcohol, that our lives had become unmanageable. So we did that in the doctor's opinion. By this point, I know for me, check. Yeah, powerless over alcohol, got it. Once I put it into my body, I can't stop. My life is unmanageable. I hate you. I hate me. I'm scared to be alone. I'm scared to be with people. You know, all of it, got it. Unmanageable. Can't balance my checkbook, can't make my bed, can't brush my teeth. Yeah, got it, unmanageable. Came to believe that a power greater than myself could restore me to sanity. Well, it looks like I can't restore me to sanity, so I'm hoping by this point something is going to be able to do it. We made that decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood him. We talked about that in We Agnostics about, you know, we have a new employer, we have a new director, I'm no longer running the show. I put myself in a position to be hurt. God is the one who's going to really direct me to the life of my wildest dreams that I am incapable of doing. We've done a more searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. And somebody had once pointed out at a meeting, what does moral mean? And I was told that moral means truthful. And I was talking to Doug, I think, at the break. When I first came into to AA, my truth was not really the truth. I think I had the capacity to be honest, which is what the requirement is, but what I thought was honest wasn't really honest. You know, my honest, what, if someone would ask me, like, Liz, are you an honest person? I'd say brutally honest. And brutally honest meant that I was the worst and did not deserve the oxygen I was breathing and that I should be dead. And that you all were way smarter, better, more perfect than I was ever going to be. And I hated myself. And that was honesty. I was being truthful. And the truth of the matter was, that's what I thought was the truth. Like, I thought that was my truth at that point. But by working these steps and going through my inventory and working with a sponsor and getting a little bit of freedom from that bondage of self, I'm able to see that, you know, that wasn't the truth. But it was the truth at that time. And I had the capacity to really to see the, what the true truth was, which was, you know, God is everything or he is nothing. There's no half measures. We the fifth proposal is admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being the exact nature of our wrongs. That's the fifth step. That's hopefully what you're just returning home from after the hour that you just spent reviewing. So that's what it tells us to do. Those are the exact clear-cut directions. There's no wiggle room. There's no, I wonder what he means by sitting for an hour. Sit for an hour. That's what that means. And it says, we carefully read back to page 75, carefully reading the first five proposals. We ask if we admitted anything. And then it asks us these crazy architectural questions. And I hear a lot in the rooms, we refer to this book, the big book, like it's a recipe, like we're baking a cake. And, you know, if you leave out the eggs or if you leave out the sugar, it'll be kind of like a cake, but not exactly the cake you like. But to be a little bit more in sync with what the book is saying, we're talking about building an arc that we can walk past through to freedom. And all throughout the steps, it's giving us these like great visuals of building an arc. Now, I don't know about you, but I'm definitely not an engineer. I'm not a builder by any sense of the imagination. So like mortar, sand, keystone, laying cement, like might as well be like gibberish to me. But I do get an idea of what they're talking about. And what they're asking here is asking us, is our work solid so far? Because to go on to step 6 and 7, we really need to be on solid grounding. Because absolutely, step 6 separates the men from the boys, women from the girls. Step 6 is, you know, it's no small potatoes. I've struggled with step 6 myself over and over again. Because these character defects, you know, if I give up at the character defect, like I'm going to stop stealing from my company, it's not because I want to be spiritually fit. It's because I don't want to go to jail. You know, there's no real great spiritual, you know, foundation for me, like not shooting people. You know, I'm not doing it because I'm like a spiritual giant. I'm doing it because I don't want to go to jail. Like, I don't want to be incarcerated. I don't want to have to explain that to my sponsor or sponsees. Sorry, but I'm in jail because I had an anger problem. It's like, you know, that's not why I do this. So what they talk about in step 6 is, you know, these low level character defects that start bubbling up, you know, the justified anger, the gossip, the talking down about people to make ourselves feel better. Those are the things that really I find can, like, the character assassinations that if I'm not careful, you know, those are the things that could still sneak in, the manipulation, the passive aggression, which is one of my favorites. Oh, no, everything's fine. Everything's fine. I'm making you pay later. You know, that's what we need to make sure our foundation is solid, because that's the type of stuff that are going to be the air pockets in our foundation, that if we're not careful about it, the whole thing's going to come crumbling down and we're going to drink again. We have to make sure that our stones are properly in place. And in the third step, they talk about this thing called a keystone. And the keystone is a stone that goes in the middle of the arc, that the entire arc is resting on this one stone. That is our third step. If that stone shifts a little, comes down a little, moves, is not there, it's all going to come crumbling down. That keystone has to be in place. So when I think Roger was talking about you know, if it's not step 3, that's a problem. Step 3 is a problem. I'm definitely having a problem with step 2. If I'm having a problem with step 2, then, you know, I'm either running the show or I don't think I'm powerless. And I think I've got all the power. So we have to make sure that all our stones are properly in place. The keystone has got to be there. How we skimped on the cement, putting into the foundation. Now, you know, like this is just following the recipe, like the cement versus sand versus mortar. Like, I don't know what any of that means, but what it means is that there are specific ingredients and ways that I need to do this to make sure everything is solid. And I looked up what mortar meant because I'm just like that. And mortar, I found this so fascinating. Mortar is what fills the gaps between blocks and binds them together. And it joins things together. That's the mortar. That's what we need, as everything needs to be joined together in order to continue with 6 through 12. And then it says, have we tried to make mortar without sand? Again, is there anything missing? Is our higher power really there? Have we truly surrendered? Have we told our sponsor everything in step 5? Is there anything we are unwilling to let go of? These are the questions that we have to ask ourselves, or else, you know, the foundation, it's going to crumble. Something is not going to work, and something's going to crumble, and we're not going to be in the thick of it. And that's what we need. We need to be in the thick of our arc that we are walking as free people, because that's where we want to go, freedom.
If we can answer yes, or if we can answer to our satisfaction, which I think is a really important line in this book, it's not that we are having been asked these questions by our sponsor or by a spiritual guide or whoever asked them of us, of ourselves. We have to be satisfied that our answers are right. It's for our satisfaction. It's not for my sponsor's satisfaction. It's not for my wife's satisfaction. It's not for my God's satisfaction. I have to be satisfied that I am in a place of just rightness at this point in my sobriety. And it says, if we can answer to our satisfaction, when we then look at step 6, we have emphasized willingness as being indispensable. And I have a couple of notes written down here in my big book. Step 6 and 7 are tools of change and tools of acceptance. 6 and 7 are the two greatest steps in this program after step 3, and they are contained in just 2 short paragraphs in the book Alcoholics Anonymous. We're going to expand a bit on 6 and 7. Liz is going to read some stuff and talk about what we know of 6 and 7 from the book The 12 Steps and 12 Traditions. I did not like this book when I first came to Alcoholics Anonymous. I was taught old school. I was determined to stay old school. You know, it was going to be nothing, but if it wasn't in the book, then it didn't matter. I came to learn that since I'm sober, I'm open to other opportunities. I'm open to other choices, and I'm open to other things. My objection to the 12 and 12 was that Bill Wilson wrote this several years after he'd written the big book. He probably was financially failing. And if he wrote another book, published it, and got it printed, he'd get a lot of money out of it. Absolutely my thought process. You know, I never said I was right. What I realized was that what he wrote were essays on how that person proceeded through the steps of Alcoholics Anonymous 1 through 12. How that person acknowledged and wrote additional work on the 12 traditions. It's a very powerful book. It's a very useful book. I prefer to take my sponsees through the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous through the big book, but I do not now, much later in my sobriety, object to using the 12 and 12 at all. Just right before we do that, another question we have asked ourselves at this point is, are we now ready to let God remove from us all the things which we have admitted are objectionable? So if we've written out a 4 step, we've admitted all these things to God, to our sponsor, and in Steve's, if you work with Steve, to God, sponsor, Steve, somebody else, and maybe somebody else. Once we've admitted all of these things, you know, next time around, so we've admitted, you know, we stole, we drove drunk, we broke the law, we did all the things that the law of the land tells us that we don't have to do. Are we finished at that point? Is that it? No. We have to go deeper, which is why you don't do the steps once. You go through them on a continuous basis, continually, because there's those little things, those little underlying things that Liz talked about. And one of the things that I'd just like to talk about really briefly, and you very rarely hear this talked about in Alcoholics Anonymous, a character defect that unfortunately I have. I know it, I admit it, and I try my best not to work with it, but every time I do, I have to take it to God. And that is the defect of prejudice. I'm white, middle-class American, and I'm prejudiced against other people. That's just part of what my makeup is. And I hate it, I don't like it, but I was taught something about prejudice a few years ago by a great man called Don P. And I'd just like to read what he reminded me what prejudice is. Prejudice is what separates me from the children of God, and therefore it separates me from God. So any time I have a thought that I'm better than you, for any reason whatsoever, I'm cutting myself off from God right then and there. Right then and there, I'm walking away. And that's not what this program has taught me. So every time that I have that thought, I have to really think about it. There are other underlying things. Gossip. Who doesn't love a good gossip? Come on, be honest. Okay. I learned by gossiping that I harm other people, even without them knowing. I don't physically walk up and punch them in the face. I don't stand there and say to somebody else in this other person's earshot, you know, what a so-and-so this person is. What I do is I walk away, and maybe a couple of days later I say to somebody else, you know what so-and-so did, you know, and I go on like that. I have no idea where that conversation is going to go. I'm saying it, and I'm saying it to somebody else. I have absolutely no idea where that conversation is going to go. And I have found, unfortunately, in my sobriety, that when I have a conversation like that with somebody else, it ends up going to the person who I was talking about, which means that I'm really harming that person. When I came to Alcoholics Anonymous, I was suggested to me, because I've never actually been told anything in Alcoholics Anonymous. Everything that I've learned, I've heard from somebody else, and I've gone to it on my own. I have never been told, you must, you should, you will. I've always been told it would be a great idea if you did. I thoroughly suggest it. When I've harmed somebody by gossiping about them, it usually ends up going back to them. Or even if it doesn't, I can't get away with it by going, well, listen, I'm going to tell you this about so-and-so, and you dare breathe a word of it. That doesn't make it any better. That absolutely doesn't make any better. And I have to think about that. And I have to be conscious, which means that I now have to be conscious of all the thought processes that go on between my ears. You know, this is a three-pound universe that never stops. 24/7, it's going, it's churning, it's working. A lot of the time, the thought processes that go on there are good to relatively good to okay. And once in a while, once in a very rare while now, but they still do, they go bad, bad, really bad. I have been given the tools, I've been given the process, I know what to do, and when I act on it, I know I'm always given the relief. I come from a lineage of sponsorship which is really dependent on inventory. If I have a problem, I call my sponsor up and I tell him what the problem is, and before I'm finished telling him what the problem is, he says, write it down, take it to God, call me back. Write it down, take it to God, and call me back. And sometimes I don't even call him with the problems because I know that's what his answer is going to be to me. And every time that I do take those actions of writing it down, taking it to God, and calling him back, I always get the relief. Mm-hmm. I absolutely get the relief. And I have, it's like, you know, what is this with me? I'm an alcoholic. Anytime I want to get relief, I'm going to do it my way and it's going to be okay because I've always done it my way and it's always been okay. No, it hasn't. No, it hasn't. Steps 6 and 7 allow me to do this, allow me to get out of my head, allows the three-pound universe between my ears to not work overtime. And I've only just mentioned the two things, the prejudice and gossip, which are things that I, unfortunately, are character defects of mine, which I have to look at and I have to work on. And they're things that are not generally talked about in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I thought hard about mentioning both of them. But they're things that, unfortunately, I think all of us at some point in our lives do. And we have no concept of the harm that we do by doing that. And more importantly, anytime we act upon our defects, we cut ourselves off from that sunlight of the Spirit. We cut ourselves off from God, which at this point in our program going through now at 6 and 7. We've worked real hard to try and get close to this person. We've worked real hard on doing this. And then we go and slam it down and walk away from it because that's what we are. But we have the opportunity to go back time and time and time again to revisit this. Thank you.
Now, I remember when I was doing my sixth step, I had this image in my head of what it actually felt like when I was in my sixth step. So if you'll indulge me, I don't know if anybody's seen the movie Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory. And you know that part where they chew the gum and they start going up and up and up, and then there's that fan at the top, and suddenly they get really close to the fan, and they start freaking out, and they're holding on for dear life, and their legs are being pulled up towards the fan, and they're holding on, and they're so scared because they're going to be, like, sucked up into this fan, and they didn't know what was going to happen when they got in the fan. They just thought they were going to die, but they weren't really sure, and they're screaming for help and screaming for help, and they're just holding on for dear life. That was me in my sixth step. I was terrified to let go of these character defects, terrified to let go of gossip, because if I didn't gossip, who was going to want to talk to me? If I wasn't prejudiced, that I had no opinions. You know, I was nothing. I was a blank slate. I was terrified, terrified to let go. I, those are the bigger ones. I mean, when they're smaller, I don't want to let them go because I feel like I've earned them. I deserved them. But that was just me. I mean, you know, six and seven can be a little ethereal and like, because there's no, like, write this down. You know, seven, there's an actual prayer. But, like, what does six mean? You know, I know for me it means it's not just about, okay, I'm willing to, like I said, stop stealing from, you know, from the government or something. It's you know, I have to actually stop stealing. Like, I can't just say, okay, I'm willing, and then go on and keep doing it. Like, this was novel to me when I heard this in a meeting once. Like, wait a minute, to stop stealing, it means I have to stop taking things that aren't mine? I don't get that. Like, if I want to, you know, stop getting into fights, I have to stop yelling at people all the time. Like, that doesn't make any sense to me. But I actually have responsibility here to take actions different than what my instincts at this point are telling me. And at this point, it's also we have a step, you know, that's telling us it's not just about, you know, yeah, it's always going to be about drinking, because if we drink, we die. And then there's, you know, faith is dead indeed. But, you know, it's like this is where the principles can solve all of our problems, not just the drink problem, all of the problems. Why can't I have relationships? Why can't I hold down a job? Why can't I pay my bills? Why am I always so worried about other people? Why can't I look the world in the eye? Why do I feel so scared and alone? And so six is all about taking this is where the acceptable becomes the unacceptable behaviors, or the unacceptable starts becoming acceptable. And, you know, common sense becomes uncommon sense. We learn to differentiate the true from the false. We're starting to recover, really, by this point. And you can't, for me, I didn't just go straight from like 4, 5, 6, 7, then 8. Like, my sponsor had me sit in 6 and 7, probably because she saw that I wasn't ready to give up my character defects too fast. But I want to read a little bit out of the 12 and 12, which, you know, it's not the big book, but it is the commentary on the big book. And I think because, you know, we were discussed, it's only like a couple of paragraphs. So this is what Bill Wilson had to say in the 12 and 12. Just a couple of things that jumped out at me. Self-righteous anger can also be very enjoyable. In a perverse way, we can actually take satisfaction from the fact that many people annoy us, for it brings us comfortable feeling of superiority. Does anyone relate to that? Gossip barbed with our anger, a polite form of murder by character assassination, has its satisfactions for us too. Here we are not trying to help those we criticize. We are trying to proclaim our own righteousness. Down a little bit farther, else why would we consume such great amounts of time wishing for what we have not? Rather than working for it or angrily looking for attributes we shall never have, instead of adjusting to the fact and accepting it. Now, acceptance is a great, great thing. You know, just to sort of go off topic a little bit, when you were speaking about gossiping, I think it was, that came to mind. There's this part in the one of the stories, page 449 of 417, for you young folk, fourth edition, about acceptance is the answer to all of my problems today. And this is where we really are able to put that into practical application. And one of my favorite parts of that passage that's always read is, when I complain about me or I complain about you, I'm complaining about God's handiwork. I'm saying I know what's better than God. And it's so easy for me to see what's wrong with you. You know, chief critic, totally, sign me up. But if I'm complaining about you, or if I'm complaining about me, saying I'm the biggest piece of dirt on whoever walked the planet, I'm saying that God made a mistake, that God didn't do his best with me and make me like one of his children or in his image. And by doing that, that's me playing God again. That's just like a reverse form of you know, playing the director by saying, I know I don't deserve happy, joyous, and free. Who am I to decide that? My sponsor always reminds me, it's not up to you to decide what you deserve. It's up for you to decide, are you going to do the work and let God figure out what you deserve? And a little bit more, and so we can get to 7. Okay, this is one of my favorites. Page in the 12 and 12, 68, if you have it. Therefore, it seems plain that few of us can quickly or easily become ready to aim at spiritual and moral perfection. We want to settle for only as much perfection as will get us by in life, according, of course, to our various and sundry ideas of what will get us by. So the difference between the boys and the men is a difference between striving for a self-determined objective and for the perfect objective, which is God. Basically, what we're saying here is, in the last sentence of this step in the 12 and 12 says, delay is dangerous and rebellion may be fatal. This is the exact point at which we abandon limited objectives, which are my objectives, and move towards God's will for us. So it's no longer what I want out of this life. I've surrendered. I have cried uncle. I cannot run the show. And when I do, it is painful and miserable and lonely. What now I have is I have to get rid of those limited objectives. They're like, I just want the house, the boyfriend, the this, the that, the perfect hair, the perfect skin, the perfect jeans, the perfect this. And then I'll be perfect and then I'll be happy. And those are my limited objectives. God wants for me bigger, more infinite, beautiful things that I can't even imagine. And it's happening. It's happening in my life. It's amazing. Like, my world is big, huge things going on, which I never thought were possible. And it's because I have laid aside what I thought I wanted for the bigger picture. And this isn't just about not drinking or about the alcohol. This is about every problem in my life. Finance, romance, you know, mothers, mother-in-laws, you name it. Like, this stuff works for all of it. And so when we're at 6, we become entirely willing to have God take us to better things. And then we're on step 7.
And step 7 says, humbly asked him to remove our shortcomings. One very simple sentence. And how do we do that? Like Steve said earlier, if anybody's really interested in how the original manuscript was written before it was published, there are several words that are changed. And Steve, I know, and myself will be only too willing to read them to you as they were originally written down before they were actually published. So how do we deal with this problem of this awful word, humble? Humble. Where have we ever heard that word before? As an Englishman, all I can remember about humble was, I believe the character's name was Mr. Squeers in a Charles Dickens novel, in which there was this really slimy, slovenly, horrible character. And he used to say, be it ever so humble, sir. And, you know, that is not what they're talking about here. There's a great difference between humility and being humble. Humble means that I've given up. Humble means that I have left it all alone. Humble means that it's just me. There's no agenda. I'm really ready to do this. Humility is what I show to other people. Being humble is what I show to God. That was something that I was taught in these rooms. Isn't it amazing, the simple little statements that you hear, that, you know, if I didn't write them down, I'd forget them. But that's, you know, the things I've heard, I've come to believe is the truth. Because not only one person has told them to me, not only two people have told them to me, but if at least three people have told them to me, there's probably a pretty good chance that it's actually a fact. And I'm stubborn, so I've got to have these things talked to me and reminded me. So how do we do this? How do we humbly ask God to remove these defects of character? We've learned what they are. We have to be willing to have them removed. And now we have to actually go about the process of doing something about it.
I'm just going to jump in real quick. Yeah. You know, there's a big thing in with my sober family, my girls and women that I work with and talk to about this idea of being perfect and getting this all right, and being the perfect AA, or else I'm going to drink, or people are going to think bad of me, or whatever. And there's this line in this step seven in the 12 and 12 again that my sponsor Thea, hi Thea, always reminds me that rebellion dogs are every step. And there's no perfect adherence to this. You know, we're going to all stumble and make mistakes and mess up. And, you know, as Heidi was saying in the third step, is that if I really am believing that I live in the spirit of the sunlight of the spirit, that even if I do stumble and make a mistake, God's going to set it right. If I truly believe that he is my new employer, if he's my father. And so, you know, I often think that I have all my character defects have got to be gone before I move to seven. I have found for me that's not the case, because once I think I'm rendered white as snow, fantastic, a new character defect will pop right back up. And so there's no perfect to this. You know, six and seven is that I get to do these over and over and over again. As long as I'm human and I have yet to find a cure for that, and I am looking, as long as I suffer from being human, I'm always going to suffer from making mistakes. That's just my lot in life. I'm never going to be perfect. I'm never always going to get it right. So don't stick on six and seven saying, well, I can't move on to seven unless all my character defects are gone, because I have not seen anyone get all of their character defects gone in one shot. I don't even know if that's possible. So just, you know, just keep doing it. Just keep doing six and seven. As the character defects come up, do a six and seven again and again and again, if need be. And that's all. That's how I've gained humility, is to recognize that, you know, I'm still human. I'm still gonna, you know, turn left when I should have turned right, yell when I should have kept quiet, kept my mouth shut when I should have, or said something when I should have kept my mouth shut. So I just wanted to pop that in there.
Joe and Charlie always say about step seven, it's like baking a cake. Put it in the oven and leave it alone until it's done. The human nature requires us. We keep opening the door to see if it's risen a bit more. Let's have a look. Now, if you know anything about the dynamics of cooking, which I happen to because I went to catering school, but if you know anything about the dynamics of cooking, every time you open the oven, you let the hot air out, you let the cold air in, the cake is never going to come out the way it should be. So really think about what was taught us here. We take our problems to God and we leave them alone. We don't interfere. It's never going to get better if we keep worrying at it. You know, you get a cut, you scratch it, you make it worse. It comes a scab, you pull the scab off. You know, I hate to be disgusting, but, you know, kids do this. It gets worse and worse. It can get infected. It can get really infected and we could die. You know, if we keep interfering with our prayer life with God, if we keep interfering with our contact with God, we are going to end up irritating, not wanting to do it, walk away from it, think a drink's going to look good, take a drink, and who knows where we go from there.
I'm just going to read real quick again. Okay. out of the 12 and 12 about step seven. This sentence that it really speaks to me. It says, "For just so long as we were convinced that we could live exclusively by our own individual strength and intelligence, for just that long was a working faith in a higher power impossible." So when by the time we hit step seven, we're realizing that I can't run the show. Like, you know, like was just said, like, every time I check on the cake and, you know, take my emotional temperature, how am I feeling today? What's going on today? How are you feeling today? As long as I am trying to still manage the show in very subtle, below the radar actions, you know, he is everything or he's nothing. That's not he is 80%, and I'm 20%. It's probably the only place where it is black and white, you know, all or nothing. If I'm running the show, even a smidgen, I'm running all of it. It's just not going to work.
And now it says in the book, now we need more action. Now we need more action. God, haven't we done enough? Come on, guys. We've done all this. Now we need to do something else. And once what we're doing about that is that we find out the faith without works is dead. So as much faith as we have, as much faith as we've shown, as much willingness as we've given, we have to go that extra step and actually do some more additional work. Now, hold on one second. Do you have anything else you want to say?
Okay. Can I just go?
Yeah, I'd like Heidi to wrap up. And then once Heidi's wrapped up on step 7, I'd like us to do something together.
Okay.
I'm sorry.
I've been confused with worse.
I am so sorry.
That's okay. Okay, a couple of other things. You know, I just want to touch again, and I'm sorry to keep going back to the 12 and 12, but I think that, you know, in the big book, it's a little bit easier said than done. So this commentary is really important for me. Is, you know, they talk about here how pain is a touchstone to growth. But it also says that there's a little caveat. We saw we needn't always be bludgeoned and beaten into humility, which is good news. Like, we don't have to, you know, sometimes I think I have to, I might as well act this way, you know, I might as well, you know, keep beating my head with this brick wall to feel better. It says it could come quite as much from our voluntary reaching for it as it could from unremitting suffering. Like, we can just surrender, actually. I don't have to be in pain to let go of a character defect. Isn't that amazing? Like, I don't have to be in pain to be free. What? That's impossible to me. And another, there it also says here is that we heard story after story of how humility had brought strength out of weakness. And I don't know about you, but I know there's been points in my recovery where it's been very, very dark, where I've done everything I'm supposed to be doing. I've been sponsoring. I've been sponsored. I've been doing service. And I've felt that loneliness, that hole. And that, of course, has led me back to finding where is my higher power, you know, and getting closer to him. But I know that my friend likes to remind me is that in my darkest moments is where my higher power loves me the most, where he's carrying me where I can't carry myself. And life on life's terms is not always, you know, what did he say, ponies and rainbows and butterflies. It's just not. Like, life is going to suck. Bad things are going to happen. People are going to pass away and get sick. Jobs are going to get lost. Marriages are going to end. Friends are going to get angry with me. It's not always going to be a picnic. But, you know, but out of all of those, as long as I stick close to this program and close to my higher power, I've always emerged closer to him, more, with more humility and with more understanding for another alcoholic who's going through the same thing. I'm able to bring that experience to help somebody else. In my experience, those dark times have never been for nothing. As long as I don't give up. If I give up and I drink, then they're self-serving. But if I stick through it, as my sponsor likes to say, when you're walking through hell, keep on walking. Get to the other side. And that's what 6 and 7 can do, because 6 and 7 can be painful. And one more thing I want to, but great. I don't want to like scare people being like, oh my God, I never want to get there. It's great. This is where the change comes. This is where the change comes. This is where we get to start looking the world in the eye. As we approach the actual taking of step 7, it might be well if we AAs inquire once more just what our deeper objectives are. Each of us would like to live at peace with himself and with his fellows. We would like to be assured that the grace of God can do for us what we cannot do for ourselves, which is very important when you hit step 9, trust me. We have seen that character defects based upon short-sighted or unworthy desires are the obstacles that block our path towards these objectives. We now clearly see that we have been making unreasonable demands upon ourselves, upon others, and upon God. And then it says here, the difference between a demand and a simple request is plain to anyone. So when I say, God, give me that intuitive thought or decision now, it's not really surrendering. I've tried it. It doesn't work. But to really have the, you know, it says the emphasis of step seven is humility. And humility comes patience. It comes with tolerance. It comes with doing things wrong and getting a chance to do them again. If that degree of humility could enable us to find the grace by which such a deadly obsession could be banished, which is our alcoholism or our desire for alcohol, then there must be hope of the same result respecting any other problem we could possibly have. Any problem. That's all of them.
Excuse me. Thank you. I'd just like to tell a quick story about steps six and seven. Some years ago when I was sponsoring this gentleman, I'd learned the way that I was best sponsored, and I thought it was a good method to sponsor this other person, and I did. I took him through the book. I suggested how best he write out his fourth step. It's four columns, take a blank piece of paper, don't need an autobiography. When you've done that, we're going to sit down. And I went to his house, and we sat down, and we ordered a pizza. And we sat down, and he read me his fifth step. And I didn't do what it was suggested in the book. I didn't suggest that he returns home and be quiet for an hour. What I did was I jumped straight into steps six and seven with him. Once we'd finished reading it, I asked him, the four questions about are the stones in place, etc., etc. I then confronted him with the question, are you now ready to let God remove all the things which you have just admitted are objectionable? And he said no. And I stopped for a second, and I thanked him very, very much indeed. Because first of all, my ego wanted him to say yes, because you are the best sponsor I'm ever having, you're the best sponsor I'm ever going to have, and Roger, you're the greatest guy on earth. He said no, because I'd forced him into an issue, I'd forced him into a question, and immediately he didn't give me the answer that I thought I wanted. I thanked the guy very much indeed, thought about it, said we'll talk, called him the next day and apologized for my behavior, and he had no clue. He had absolutely no clue that that was what was going on in my head. It taught me the true meaning of humility. Whenever I do anything for anybody else in Alcoholics Anonymous, even though I may get some benefit from it, it is not for me. It is absolutely not for me. And if nobody has any objections, what I would like us to do to wrap up step seven. And isn't it amazing? It's now, 3:40 in the afternoon. We started this whole thing at 10 o'clock this morning. 4:40. Oh, God. See? English time. No, that's not true. Isn't it amazing the amount of work that we've done in just one short day? I think we all need to congratulate ourselves on what we've done and what we've learned and what we hopefully have learned from others. And I would like to...
Can I just real quick? And I just want to say real quick is if you're new, if you're like just going through the steps for the first time and all of this sounds like, you know, like I was saying earlier, astrophysics, and you're like, what are these people talking about? I just want to assure you that I didn't read the big book the first time and get all this. Like this, you know... And I don't know anybody who like just walks in and gets it. It comes through time and doing it wrong and then doing it right and good sponsorship and good, strong people around me to show me the path and keep me on the straight and narrow. And if you're worried about these character defects and this inventory and this, you know, letting God do for me what I can't do for myself, and that seems really overwhelming, you know what? Just take it one step at a time. Just take it one day at a time. If right now the best you can do is not drink, just don't drink. And if you have a sponsor, just do what your sponsor says. This is step six and seven. We all have to start at step one, which is powerlessness and unmanageability. So, you know, I know we're going to keep going on and it's going to get more and more intense with these, you know, upcoming amends and meditation and daily inventories and all of that. But you know, now that we're like in the halfway point of the steps, you know, just keep it really simple. It's really easy to make this like much bigger. Keep it simple. Work on the step that you're on. Stay on the step that you are currently on. Don't jump to six. Just stay where you're at.
And I'd also like to say that if anybody in this room has any questions, if anybody that's sat up here on this panel, I speak for myself, but I'm sure I also speak for them. We would be happy to talk to you. We'd be happy to work with you. We'd be happy to make suggestions. For those of us who are not at step seven, I personally have been there and I'm still in there because it's a constant journey for me. I would like us all to stand and say the seven-step prayer if anybody has any objections to that. I think not. Okay.
Pardon? It's on page 76 of your big book. And then after we do the seven-step prayer, if we could just have a few more minutes just to talk about what we've just done, I think that'll be important too.
Thank you. When ready, we said something like this. My Creator, I am now willing that you should have all of me, good and bad. I pray that you now remove from me every single defect of character which stands in the way of my usefulness to you and to my fellows. Grant me strength as I go out from here to do your bidding. Amen. And point notice that this is the first and only time in the book Alcoholics Anonymous that they say amen.
Okay, and just before we break for a dinner break, we could all sit down. Okay. I think it's important whenever I go through these prayers with my sponsees to, like, what did we just say? Like, what did we just do? It's easy just to say these words, but what did I just give myself to? Like, what kind of oath did I just take? And basically what the seventh step is, just to take it line by line, is I'm now willing, and you know, willingness is indispensable at this point. Willing that you, God, he should have all of me, not just my drinking, all of me, the whole hook, line, and sinker, root and branch, all of it. Good and bad. Don't just take the bad stuff, take the good stuff, because I can't handle it. When I have good, I keep having good until I turn it into bad. I want him to have all of it. I can't handle any of it. I'm completely untrustworthy with myself. I pray that he now removes from me every single defect of character which stands in the way of my usefulness to you, my fellows. You know, and that's not all of my defects right now. That's just the ones that are standing in the way. You know, so if they're gonna all be removed one by one eventually, and new ones are gonna pop up, like I was saying. But right now, when I take this step right now, the ones that are blocking me from you and me from him, those have got to be the first ones to go. Those have got to be the first ones that are go. So my usefulness, because I need to be useful today. That's the promises that this book is giving us. It's not only do we get freedom from bondage of self and we don't drink for 24 hours, but we get a chance to be useful. When I was drinking, I was useless. And I asked God to give me strength to go out here and do his bidding, because sometimes carrying the message of AA, you can be the loneliest person in the room. And it takes a lot of strength to not gossip, to keep my prejudices from being of service, to keep me separated from me and you. It takes strength to do the right thing. It does. If it were easy, we'd all do it. We'd all be like white as snow. But it does take courage. It does take strength. And what we're saying here in the step is that strength does not originate in me. I don't have the strength. I need my higher power to give me that strength so I can do his work. Not my work, his work. And that's what I'm doing in step seven, is that it's not my show. You give me the power so I can do what you want me to do. And that leads us to 8 and 9. So I think it's where.
Yeah. Thank you so much.
Thanks.
Ron, do you have any announcements?
And Heidi, okay, because they're going to speak on steps 8 and 9, which is chapter 9 in the big book. So it's all theirs.
Good morning, everyone. My name is Heidi, and I'm an alcoholic. Hi, how you all doing today? Good. Great to see you. Hi, Steve.
Hi, babe.
Oh, okay. Well, we are very, very thanks again, Ron. We're very excited to be here, and let's get right into the work. Yesterday we talked about step 6 and 7, and you know, one of my favorite lines actually in the 12 and 12, when it gets into step 8, is it's this great line that I'm a big fan of, like, finding the encouraging, positive, phrases in the literature, because I have this negative, you know, negative mind, and I really need those encouraging, positive phrases. And one of the things it talks about in step eight is learning to live with, it's like learning to live with our fellows is a moving and fascinating adventure, which should continue for our lifetime. And I always think about that when I'm in a pickle in relationships, like, okay, this is a moving and fascinating adventure, right? You know, and later on in very fascinating and very moving at times. And to me, step eight is what I have learned is that it's about seeing the pattern of my relationships. And what I have learned is that step eight is separate from step nine. So that's the first thing for me that I always take into this work is my sponsor just hammered at home is you do eight like nine does not exist. You do eight like nine does not exist. So step eight is a separate exercise in and of itself. Steve, you know, we talked about how we make that eight-step list. And one of the things that the book talks about is, you know, we made it when we took inventory. Now, Steve referenced this yesterday, and, you know, there's some people who are on my inventory that aren't necessarily on my eight-step list, and there's some people who weren't in my inventory that are on my eight-step list, right? Because sometimes I don't have any resentment in connection with harms that I've done. Just briefly, and then we'll get into the literature, and I'll turn it over to Steve. You know, when I do step eight, I go back through my inventory, you know, go back through, you know, whatever, my history, and I put the person's name, and then I bullet point the harm. And once again, and sometimes, you know, it seems like, okay, didn't I do this in my four step? This is just for me how I do it. But what I get, again, is a really clear view of my pattern of behavior, you know, my pattern of behavior and who I am in relationships. Steve?
Good morning.
Good morning.
And so at this point, when we get to eight, we've been through six and seven, and sometimes there's a question in five. And so I just want to take a minute when I'm working with people and we, you know, I don't always hear their fifth steps. They have sponsors sometimes, and they'll come back and we'll do a check-in, and I want to hear about their experience with their sponsor. And, you know, my truth is that after five, there's a shift. There's, you know, all of a sudden there is, and people have described it to me in ways that they felt physically lighter. My boy Anthony does this with me when we do this at home, and sometimes we're jealous, like listening to the experience that they've had, you know, which, you know, for us is great to hear. And sometimes they come home they come back, and I don't hear it. You know, I don't see the light bulb has gone off. And so what we can do is we can turn to 75, page 75, and we have the 7-5 checklist in the middle of the page. And so if there's a question about what 5 looked like for you, you know, you can ask these questions. You know, can you be alone at perfect peace and ease? Have your fears fell from you? And those kinds of questions. And then sometimes we'll ask them to go back out and do it again. Sometimes we'll suggest someone because we have, like, you know, a group of people that are used to doing this. 6-7 brings us to 8. You know, Heidi mentioned that we have a whole host of people that, you know, that are on our 8-step list that we just did things to, you know.
Another thing that we talked about is, you know, I really actually... For me, you know, sometimes there's these different tools that people use, like making 3 lists of like now, later, never, and
yeah.
I'm not really a fan of giving my opinion from the podium, but I will say what my experience is. I just had one list. I didn't separate things because, you know, for me. You know, what the book clearly says is that it was agreed at the beginning that we would go to any lengths for victory over alcohol. You know, and that's what I want. I want victory over alcohol. I want freedom, not just relief. and I have no judgment about whatever tool works for anybody else, but I'll just say that for me. And, you know, the book is so reassuring on 76. Probably there are still some misgivings. You know, and I just point that out because, again, you know, I read this book so long, like it was like, you must do this. You're a piece of crap. You know, and that's not what it's saying. It's saying, yeah, you know what? This is big work. This is tough work. That's all right. You can do it. Let us be reassured. I mean, it says that right there. What is really interesting to me is, you know, when I first took a seven step, I asked God to remove those defects of character, and I thought, great. I wrote down the date. You know, I still remember. I think, actually, I still have this little card where I recorded the date of my first seven step because I thought, amazing. You know, I'm going to be, this is it. Like, I got to remember this day.
In no time at all, you'll be fixed.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, and I got in my little, you know, Honda Accord and, you know, and with all my defects, you know, like they were all in the car with me. And I was like, what happened, you know? And, you know, and it was funny because for many years, it's funny, Liz and I were talking last night. And, you know, I think for a long time it was, I would, you know, have this sort of like, you know, it's so... I would think to myself, I would hear people talking in meetings about struggling with dishonesty or struggling with relationships or, you know, slipping up in one of their intimate relationships. And I'd be like, did you take your seven step or not? Like, I had all this judgment. And, you know, and what I have found that is that it's very easy for me to say this prayer and to act this way on paper or in my mind. But really, like, the proof of a truth, you know, my action, the step 6 and 7 goes into action when I do my 8 and 9, you know, and when I go out into the world and face these people that I've harmed.
If there is a question, and again, you know, this is just my humble opinion. If you think that you belong on 8, take another look. As alcoholics, we have had no trouble trying to take care of ourselves. You do not owe yourself an amend. All right.
I've heard that, okay, I definitely hurt myself. I mean, I actually physically used to punch myself, punch my own face into, you know, in sobriety. I did that. That's how well I was for many years. So, you know, and you know, how I have made amends to myself is by making amends to others and by being of service and by learning to live a sober life in all ways. On 77, it tells me what my real purpose is.
There you go.
Our real purpose is to fit ourselves to be of maximum service to God and the people about us.
And it's important to note at this point that your recovery stops being about you. You see, we got here and it was me, me, me. I wanted to stop drinking. I needed to get this. I needed to fix that. I need. And at this point, there's the shift. If you're in this program and you're in this faith and you're feeling the Spirit, at this point, your recovery stops being about you. Your recovery begins to be about your loved ones, your community, your family, and those about you. I got, you know, real quick, and I got to tell you, this is like alien philosophy for alcoholics when we get this. It's like, whoa, you know. But the truth of the matter is, the rest of the universe does this on a regular basis. I'm in a restaurant in wherever, Vermont, Friday night, and I'm wrapping up my hand, and the waitress comes over to me and says, can I help you with that? I'm from New York. You're lucky if a waitress can bring you food in New York. I'm in New York. I'm in Vermont, and a girl's offering to wrap my hand. She wanted to be of service to me. You see, and I was watching, I was like, oh, my God. This is what we aspire to be. So it doesn't matter where we are. And the book is real specific about, you know, it might even the original basic text said especially alcoholics, but it didn't say only alcoholics.
You know, in on 77, like all through this chapter, the book is so clear on what to do in several different situations. And there's this great line, like it talks about not sort of emphasizing this, our new spiritual philosophy when we go to people. You know, all we're trying to do is to put our lives in order. You know, and it says, you know, our man is sure to be impressed with a sincere desire to set right the wrong. A he's going to be more interested in a demonstration of goodwill than in our talk of spiritual discoveries. That's all this is. Not a big deal, right? If anyone's like, oh my God, you know, not a big deal. I think about, just to share a little amends story, my stepmother, she and I butted heads from the beginning. My dad hooked up with her when I was around 11, 12, which is right when I just, you know, blazed into alcoholism. And we moved in, of course. And so for me, it was like I hit the jackpot. We lived in the nice house on the development on the cul-de-sac. Suddenly she had a car that wasn't embarrassing. And I ripped through her house like, you know, like a tornado. And, you know, we were exact opposite personality types, at least when I was drinking. Now we're so alike. It's funny. But anyway, when I made amends to her, you know, I made this amends to her. Or I was all set to, like, have this big, long talk with her. And, you know, literally I got out about 60 seconds of, you know, of my little planned amends. And then she just changed the topic. She didn't want to talk about it anymore. And I was like, okay. And I really got it. I got that line. All she wanted to do was to see me healthy, to see me not ripping my dad off, and to see me cleaning up after myself. You know, and just to see me living a good life. And even that, like, you know, we'll reference this later on. You know, for a long time when I would go home and be with my stepmother and my father, I would, you know, I would want to prove that I was that new sober girl, that I wasn't that irresponsible, crazy girl that I was. And so, you know, I'd be doing the dishes and I'd be cleaning up and I'd be, you know, if my dad gave me $20 to go to the store, I'd be like, you know, I'd like pay him back, you know, I'm going to be perfect now. I'm going to be perfect. And, you know, for years I acted this way. And Joe and Charlie said something that I always think of. They say, you know, I already paid that electric bill. That's last month's electric bill. I'm not going to keep paying it. And what I found also is that my behavior was still very self-centered because I was trying to get her, you know, I was trying to prove to her that I was a changed person, you know. And what I found too is that it's funny because, you know, I do need to keep the other person in mind with my amends, but I also, you know, ultimately, I can't make it a self-centered thing. It is about my work, but I can't make it about getting, the amend is not about getting somebody to like me again. It's about, you know, living by the principles, because that's what I've uncovered in my 8-step inventory, in my 4-step inventory, changing the way I behave because of my inventory, because I've seen, oh, wait, you know what? This really got me in trouble in the past.
One of the things I want to make really important is that, you know, please, 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 you know, worship the process. Don't worship the word. Okay? So when we get into this point in our recovery, you know, we're not tied to the outcome. This isn't about what you know, what happens, because there's going to be some people that just aren't interested, and that's fine. It's not the outcome. It's the process. Why? Because I'm humbling myself. I'm opening myself up. I'm making myself vulnerable, and I'm humbling myself before you, my fellow man. Now, I think I know what I did, right? Mm-hmm. But guess what? When I come to you, I'm going to tell you what I think I did, and then I'm going to ask you, was there any other way that I wronged you? The book tells us that we don't use frothy emotional appeals. You know, I'm not going to whine on you and tell you how sorry I am. That just doesn't change anything in the universe, right? So what I need to do is I need to make a demonstration to you. And so whatever it was, when we do this work one-on-one, there's long examples I give that we don't have time for here today. There's the thing that I think I did, and then there's the ramifications that created. And you know what? It doesn't feel good. And it's not supposed to feel good. You know what? I'm having to own it. The reality of it is, it's just another one of those steps that I go into thinking I'm alone, but I'm not. You see, if I take my God with me into this process, all of a sudden, I have that newfound power. And I have that support, and I have that ability to do things which I could never have done by myself. You see? And that's all the outgrowth of 3. We go nowhere alone. We do nothing alone. And then we also have our sponsors to push and coach and prod us, you know. I recently had a thing come up. I was working with some newcomers a year or so ago, and I got to tell you, I've been through this work a bunch of times, and all of a sudden occurred to me something that I had done early in sobriety. And, you know, so the life I led before I got here, suffice to say, who stands before you is the Charm School graduate. This is not who I was, you know, when I got here. In fact, when I got here, there might have been an invisible barrier of 15 feet around me where no one would come that close to me. And I had done some things early in recovery, and use that phrase loosely, and it just came to me. It just came to me 20 years later. And I said, okay. And so now it's 20 years later. I'm a pillar of my community, to another phrase I use loosely. But I'm in the newspapers a lot for charity work and some other things that I do. And, you know, again, just perks as a result of the gifts of this fellowship. And so now I'm faced with this dilemma. I have this business that I wronged. I mean, largely. And I have to go to them. And these are now my peers. Right? And so it was kind of funny because I made the phone call. And I said, you know, told them who I was. And I said, you know, Bob, I want to talk to you. And it was funny because they remembered me from 22 and 23 years ago. So when I went to talk to them, there was two guys there. There was three guys outside the door. And I'm like, okay, I get it, you know. And but the truth of the matter is, I had to say, you know, this is what it was, and whatever you guys say, you know, whatever it is. And, you know, we squared it. See, I went through the process where I thought I was going to send them a check and I write them an anonymous letter, but we don't do that, you know. I thought maybe, well, you know what, I'll just start doing a lot of business with them, and I'll make it up that way because I can. We don't do that. You see, I needed to see these two men face to face. And I needed to humble myself before them. And I got to tell you, it made an impact. And after we were done, one of the brothers and I had a long conversation about spirituality and the power of God in our lives. And he subsequently passed about 2 months ago. But I got to do that. And to the best of my recollection, that was the last one. I didn't know that I had any others. My sponsor believes that you have not been through these 12 steps until you've completed your amends. And that you should not be working with other alcoholics. Why? Because there's power in what comes out of this. You are going to have an experience as a result of this work in 9.
Armin and Gary, my two faves, always used to say that once you make your amends, you have a message to carry, not a mess. And I always identify with that. On 77, it talks about with what to do with a person that we're still angry with. The question of how to approach the man we hated will arise. With a person that we dislike, we take the bit in our teeth. Thank you. And I learned just recently what actually a bit is. It's a horseback riding term. And I always thought, you know, again, my punishing thinking, I always thought that a bit, you know, just meant that I had to just clamp down on something, you know, just bite it, you know, and just do it, you know. And the bit is actually that something that, you know, correct me if I'm wrong, Kareth, but the bit is something that goes in the horse's mouth and then it's used to guide them, you know. So, you know, I love metaphors, you know. It's like I use God to give me restraint of tongue and pen, and, you know, and God is what's guiding me. But hopefully, you know, just, you know, step 8, one of the things that I learned is that it's so much about forgiveness and really, really making that leap to forgiveness. And there's a couple tools that I just want to pass on. Number one is the story Freedom from Bondage. You know, there's, of course, the 4-step prayer, which is, you know, God, this is a sick man. How can I be helpful to him? God, save me from being angry. Thy will be done. But also in the story Freedom from Bondage, I think it's page 552 in the third edition. I'm not sure what it is. It might be that 552 actually in the fourth edition. But it's freedom from bondage, and there's this great passage, and she gets this advice to basically pray for this resentment with her mother for 2 weeks straight. And this is a formula, you guys, that really, really works. I've used it several times, and it works. Also, this is non-conference approved, but it's something that I've – that's right. I know. Uh-oh. Well, you know what? I believe that I have a loving God, so I'm just going to say it anyway. Emmett Fox has a great thing on forgiveness. If anyone's interested in that, I'm happy to pass that on. It's wonderful and has been really, really helpful to me. It really talks about making a daily, freely and fully forgiving everybody every day, you know, and loosing the incident in question from your mind. On the bottom of 77, it gives us very clear directions. It is not vague at all. Under no condition do we criticize such a person or argue. Simply, we tell them that we will never get over drinking until we have done our utmost to straighten out the past. We are there to sweep off our side of the street, okay? There to sweep off our side of the street. Nothing can be accomplished until we do so. Never trying to tell him what he should do. His faults are not discussed. We stick to our own. And I want to just share for a minute about an amends that I made with my mother a few years ago. One of the big harms, and it's a subtle harm. And one of the things that Steve and I talked a lot about in preparing for this talk was there's like the obvious harms, like I rip.